Alaskans, we're still dealing with a pandemic. Longer nights and seasonal affective disorder don't make it any easier. We encourage you to take care of both your mental and physical health this winter. Get outside. Enjoy traditional foods. Connect with your community. And keep your body moving. Let's take care of ourselves and each other.
Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Melissa Yakyadi London. Solar energy is both a business and an answer to hard-to-solve energy distribution barriers for Native people. From Pine Ridge, South Dakota, to the Navajo Nation, to Shugnak, Alaska, Native-owned solar operations offer energy solutions for both providers and customers. Coming up this hour, we'll hear about advancements in technology and the financial incentives that are driving the switch to solar power. We're back right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. An intertribal agency says a draft environmental review of a project to reroute an oil pipeline across northern Wisconsin is flawed. Danielle Kading reports the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources recently released its draft review of a 40-mile reroute of Line 5 around a Lake Superior tribe's reservation.
Enbridge's proposed route is expected to cross nearly 200 water bodies and affect 135 acres of wetland. John Coleman with the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission says the state's review lacks enough data to support the impacts of any oil spill to downstream waters, including Lake Superior.
There really needs to be a thorough description of the risks being posed by putting this pipeline around the reservation. And Enbridge does not have a great history with spills.
Federal pipeline safety data shows Line 5 has spilled more than 1 million gallons of oil on land since 1968. The DNR says the agency will review all comments and make any corrections necessary. Enbridge is pleased the reroute is moving forward, saying it will create 700 jobs. I'm Danielle Kading.
Tuesday was the winter solstice, the longest night of the year, and cities across the country held memorials for people experiencing homelessness. Yellowstone Public Radio's Kayla DeRoche attended a candlelight vigil in Billings.
About 50 people gather on the Yellowstone County Courthouse lawn to honor people experiencing homelessness. Upsalugat tribal member Josiah Huggs places a smoking half shell of herbs nearby and sings a song of prayer as people step forward to smudge themselves. Huggs works in youth suicide prevention at Billings Urban Indian Health and Wellness Center. He says Native American youth experiencing homelessness often feel conflicted about their place in the community.
Like, who am I? Where am I? What tribe am I? What does that mean to be part of a tribe? You know, I think that there's a disconnect there with the urban population. And that's kind of like one of our goals, is to like educate through our events.
State data from 2020 show that Native American youth make up the largest proportion of students experiencing homelessness in Montana. The Tumbleweed Program in Billings is a 24/7 nonprofit agency that offers vulnerable children and young adults a range of free services, including counseling, emergency shelter placement, and guidance. Reporting from Billings, Montana, I'm Kayla DeRoche for National Native News.
Oral arguments are set for January 12th over South Dakota's fight to set off fireworks at Mount Rushmore. The National Park Service denied the state's application in 2021. The state is seeking a permit for 2022. Victoria Wicks has more.
When the state was denied a permit for fireworks at Mount Rushmore in 2021, Governor Kristi Noem sued in federal court. But federal judge Roberto Lang upheld the denial, citing the National Park Service's concerns. The fireworks show would draw up to 10,000 people during a pandemic, and the increased traffic might damage new construction at Mount Rushmore. The exploding fireworks could pollute water sources or spark forest fires around the monument. Lang also noted that permitting fireworks might further damage the fragile relationship between Indigenous people and the federal government. The state appealed Lange's judgment to the Eighth Circuit and asked for an expedited hearing so the case can be decided before the Park Service considers a permit for 2022. The appellate court complied with that request. Defendants are Interior Secretary Deb Holland and the National Park Service. The Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe and its Historic Preservation Officer, Steve Vance, are intervener defendants. The state is joined by 16 other states, and the feds and the tribe are joined by the National Parks Conservation Association.
That was Victoria Wicks, and I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
There are now booster recommendations for all three available COVID-19 vaccines in the United States, and you may choose which booster shot you receive. More info at aaip.org or cdc.gov/coronavirus, who support this show. Support by the Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, dedicated to cancer research, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous population. A no-charge online risk assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling, and I'm Melissa London. Solar energy is a growing source of economic development. It's an $11 billion industry, and experts predict continued growth at least over the next 5 years, despite the pandemic. For workers, almost 300,000 jobs were tied to the solar industry in 2020, and economists see that number tripling over the next 15 years. And for consumers, solar options can at least cut the cost of electricity. For Native people in rural areas, solar might be the most viable option for any electricity at all. Today, we're going to hear from solar advocates who see energy from the sun as a way for tribes to exercise sovereignty while providing a sustainable resource. And we want to hear from you. Do you already have access to solar power? Is it something your tribe could invest in? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's 1-800-99-NATIVE. Now our first guest is Cody Two Bears. He is a co-founder of the Indigenized Energy Initiative, and he is a member of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. Welcome to Native America Calling, Cody.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, and thank you for being able to have this platform to be able to tell other Native Americans the happenings out there and some of the great work that a lot of Native organizations are doing.
Thank you. Appreciate you being here. Now tell us about how your organization, the Indigenized Energy Initiative, came to be.
Yeah, so, you know, if a lot of you remember the No Dapple movement that happened on Standing Rock in my community of Cannonball in North Dakota, you know, Dakota Access Pipeline, a lot of people from around the world came there. 350-plus tribes from around the country supported us in those efforts, and we're on the ground. And that pipeline, they laid across the Missouri River, was about, you know, a half mile to a mile away from our community. And one thing that I've seen with the encampments and different things that happened there was through the encampments is a lot of people were providing their own energy, whether they had these little wind turbines in the camps or pulling their own solar trailers in and providing their own energy. And one thing I've learned from that is that, you know, a lot of people created a lot of great awareness around, you know, how we have to move away from fossil fuels and coal and different types of things like that and move to more regenerative energy sources that doesn't distract from the land, that contaminates our water, affects our animals. And one thing that I wanted to do is, you know, I was on tribal council during that time from 2013 to 2017 when all these things happened for the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. I told myself I was done talking about it. I was done creating awareness, and I wanted to actually do something about it. So during that time, you know, since I got off politics in 2017, I initiated the largest solar farm in the state of North Dakota, which is very hard to do because North Dakota is the second leading oil-producing state in the country, one of the top five producing coal states in the country. So So their policies are always directed right around fossil fuel-driven energies. So to be able to do that, largest solar farm on our reservation in the highest poverty community in our state and one of the highest poverty counties in the country, I told myself, now we're able to do that anywhere. Because if we're able to do it there, we're able to do it anywhere in all Native communities all over the country. And I wanted to be able to share that knowledge of what I've created there with the rest of the tribes. And that's why Indigenized Energy Initiative was created, because now it's one thing to create awareness, but now we're actually not just talking about it, we're actually doing the work and we're being about it, and we're trying to be able to give the tools to Native American tribes, Native American membership, to be able to develop these things within their own communities.
It's an amazing backstory. Didn't you say prior to the show that Barack Obama also visited your community?
Yeah, so back, if you guys remember, that was Barack Obama's only official reservation visit in his eight-year tenure. When I was leadership of that community, Barack Obama came into my community and spoke about how he wanted to help protect Native American rights and Native American issues, and not knowing he had to make a big decision, you know, 2 years later on having to deny the permit or the easement that the pipeline to cross our Missouri River waters. So he had to make that decision in 2017 before he got out of office, before Trump came in. And, you know, I think the third day in office or something like that, he did an executive order to push Dakota Access Pipeline through, which allowed them to approve the easement. And, of course, as of today, that pipeline is currently flowing today, which we're still in court as the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe is still trying to get them to do the full EIS and stop the flow of that pipeline.
What does a full EIS mean?
Environmental impact statement. So in the original EA that Dakota Access Pipeline had, environmental assessment, us as a tribe, we weren't never mentioned in there. They never mentioned the environmental impacts that it will have, whether it's on our water, our animals, or just our land environment around us. So if anybody knows the permitting process of the EA and Nationwide Permit 12, it's one of the easiest permitting processes available to do infrastructural projects like pipelines. So it's like pipelines fall in the same line as transmission lines that cross overhead of water resources. Pipelines follow that same permitting process. But the way we look at it is pipelines do more destructive things to the land than transmission lines would do by going over the top of it. So it should not be the same permitting process as, you know, a power line or anything like that. So that's why we as a tribe wanted to have them do a full EIS, which could possibly take, you know, 5 to 7 years to develop that, and which would have to stop the oil flow of the pipeline. And if we were to do that, well, they do that process, it would probably bankrupt that pipeline forever becoming operational again. But I think that's something that, you know, is very important to our people, that we need to be mentioned in these full environmental impact statements and how we're going to be effective. And we were never mentioned within the original EA of that original pipeline approval.
Definitely. Tribes are an important stakeholder and should be mentioned in the environmental impact reports. That's astonishing that that is not the case. Can you tell us how, even with all of this adversity and the policy not being in favor of clean energy, how did you get the largest solar farm to exist in a state that otherwise isn't very supportive of clean energy, it sounds like?
Yeah, so it's one thing to actually, you know, talk about it, but it's another thing to be about it. And that was my goal from the beginning is, you know, a lot of people are creating a lot of great awareness around stopping fossil fuels or protecting our lands, our sacred sites, our water and our resources, natural resources. But now, there's not too many organizations that are actually giving the tools to be able to provide these things to Native tribes, Native communities. I know there's only been a few of them. You know, Chief Henry Red Cloud, which is on this call today, he's been doing this since the 90s. You know, he's been one of the great examples that I've been following as well on taking that lead and saying, hey, we need to create more awareness. We need to give more tools to Native tribes to be able to combat what we're protesting about, right? So how I was able to pull that off is, you know, if there's something that I didn't know as a Native American person, I reached out to individuals that knew how to do it. I shared my vision and my plan with how I wanted to be able to bring renewable energy, not just in my community, but to all Native communities across the country. But the only issue we always face is that as Native Americans, we're a hard people to trust. And a lot of people that have this information are non-Native people because technology sometimes is still new to Native people and Native reservations. But I utilize renewable energy as a good technology, a good way of flourishing and protecting our natural resources, our land and the water and animals. So every time we do put up these infrastructures of renewable energy, it does that much more in protecting our environment for our future generations to come. And what I did was I garnered a lot of experts from around the country to help me, guide me through this process of how we develop renewable energy into my homelands and blazing that trail for a lot of Native Americans in our area in the Northern Plains to exactly how to do that. And by doing that, I was able to develop that solar farm by garnering a lot of expertise from the outside world and bringing those good resources in and collaborating that with our traditional customs and who we are as a people to be able to develop that process. So it did take me 2 years. We did launch that in July of 2019, and since been in operational of that solar farm in our community in Cannonball that saved over $30,000 for our community up to the year to date.
That's amazing. I do want to bring in Chief Henry Red Cloud into the conversation since you did reference him. He's joining us from Pine Ridge, South Dakota, and he's the Executive Director of Red Cloud Renewable, and he's Oglala Lakota. Welcome back to Native American Calling, Traditional Chief Henry Red Cloud.
Thank you. He and Washtail would like to greetings to one and all. We here at RCR, I got involved in solar in 1997, and since then was able to develop a manufacturing facility as well as a training facility in the heart of Indian country. Today, we had over 900 students partake in our courses from grid tie, standalone, battery-based systems, small, lighting systems, and So for the past couple of 3 years, it's always been a hope, a vision of mine to bring the national certification in solar to Indian country, which we was able to obtain that 3 years ago. And today we have 14 students certified with the national certification, representing 11 tribes. Today we're working with over 70 of the federally recognized tribes on their solar projects, may it be rooftop or commercial, creating economic opportunities within the back door of the original nation's back door. So,
and Traditional Chief Red Cloud, it sounds like you also helped with this project, and we're going to hear more about that after the break. But we do need to take a break at the moment. So this is Native America Calling, and I'm your host, Alyssa London. Please consider calling in and joining our conversation today. But for now, we'll be right back after this break. No matter what the last year was like for you, the path ahead in 2022 is full of promise and potential. It's the time of year to think about new starts and new opportunities. We'll get guidance and inspiration for making the most of your goals in the coming year on the next Native America Calling.
The COVID-19 vaccine rollout for children ages 5 to 11 years old is already well underway. Children who get the vaccine will receive strong protection against the COVID-19 disease, and getting children vaccinated will help keep all members of our communities safe. You can contact your child's health care provider or tribal health department to schedule their vaccine appointment today. Support for this program is provided by the Johns Hopkins Center for American Indian Health.
This is Native America Calling, and I'm Alyssa London. Today is all about sovereignty and solar power. A solar business incubator in the upper Midwest is encouraging tribes to embrace solar for economic development, jobs, and sustainable energy. A number of tribes are manufacturing and installing solar systems for their citizens. And you can get in on the conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Now, before the break, we were speaking with Chief Henry Red Cloud, Executive Director of Red Cloud Renewable, and also Cody Two Bears, co-founder of Indigenized Energy Initiative. Chief Red Cloud, would love for you to finish your thought about what it was like collaborating with the team at Indigenized Energy Initiative.
Yes, that was a very successful project that happened there in Standing Rock. I was very honored to be part of it. The students came to my training facility and trained the week before on a grid tie, residential scale ground mount grid tie system. With the knowledge there that they received, then the following week they implemented there in Standing Rock and built a nice 10 kilowatt system there. It was an honor to work with the students and see how they look to furthering their knowledge around solar. So many partnerships happen there that I believe some of the students there are currently installing, maybe within the Nebraska or the North Dakota state there.
There was amazing
individual there. Yeah, so I think they're currently working.
That's awesome. Cody, can you tell us more about the installation and the process of creating your solar energy farm and more about who you worked with, such as Chief Red Cloud?
Yeah, so let me tell you what's so historic about, you know, what also NoDAPL has brought attention to a lot of issues around the world, but it taught us that if we all come together, we can all accomplish amazing things. And one thing that why Indigenized Energy Initiative is so important moving forward is we did just that. We're collaborating with, Otto Braided Hair, which is also a co-founder of Indigenized Energy Initiative. They fought coal for so many years in the state of Montana in the Northern Cheyenne Res. Just north of their borders is one of the biggest coal plants in the country. But, you know, Northern Cheyenne has been saying no to coal for the last 20 years. And, you know, they've been implementing renewable energy within their homelands. And it's so great to have Otto Braided Hair on our team. Also, Robert Blake, which is a, trailblazer in his own right in the state of Minnesota. He has Solar Bear, which is the only native-owned solar company in the state of Minnesota. Did remarkable projects for the Red Lake Nation. He's also on our advisory board on Indigenized Energy Initiative. And, of course, you know, I call him the original OG, right? Like, the guy that's been doing this long before we have is, you know, Chief Henry Red Cloud. He's on our advisory board. And then myself, being the biggest solar developer in the state of North Dakota, being native, it's so awesome for us to finally merge together to be able to bring more resources to our native people and bring that expertise and how we can do it in native country. And the project on Standing Rock was just a testament on how, you know, inspiring it is to be able to train solar warriors utilizing Henry's project and putting them to work utilizing Indigenized Energy Initiative on bringing those training and those tools to different reservations. The project on Standing Rock was sponsored by Adidas. Thankfully, we had a great partner in Pharrell Williams to be able to help us do that project. And what's so cool about that is we had five different reservations, not just Standing Rock, not just Pine Ridge, five different reservations from our surrounding areas of solar warriors that we trained to help build that system for that elderly family. And the very first month of being in service, a full month, the month of October, that offset their elderly home's utility bill to zero, which has never happened in Standing Rock. And we're so proud and acknowledgeable to know that it's proven that we can train solar warriors, create them jobs, empower their lives to do something more. And at the same time, we're saving utility bills at $0 for elderly families within Standing Rock. And we want to be able to share that knowledge with other reservations across the country.
Can you expand on that thought in terms of how it is helping with the, economics of your community? So you mentioned earlier in the show how impoverished the reservation is. It's one of the most impoverished communities in the state. And so this project is helping to eliminate that or reduce that. And some of the ways that it's doing that is by helping reduce utility bills and providing jobs. Can you just expand on that so people can understand how momentous this is, even in terms of putting money back in people's pockets and allowing them to take care of their families better in this way?
Yeah, so, you know, as Native people, I think it's good for them to make them understand that connection on why renewable energy is important, why this technology is so important to Native cultures and our ways of life moving forward, is that, you know, we all understand that traditional medicines are important within our homelands. We all understand that traditional foods, food sovereignty is so important for health and making sure people know how to continue to grow foods within their homelands so they don't have to outsource. You look at, you know, language and culture, so very important. But I feel like, you know, energy now is that missing link. As we look forward 7 generations of the people that are unborn, energy fits right in line with some of those things moving forward now and why it's important that we can't continue to keep outsourcing and rely on outside resources anymore. We have to take energy within our own hands. And why I say that is you look at what happened to Texas, the state of Texas, about 6 or 7 months ago when they were cut off with electricity and energy. A lot of people have died because of that. And we know how important energy is to Native people moving forward, because how they extract energy around us through fossil fuels is just tearing up our lands and our ways of life and our sacred sites. So by us implementing renewable energy on reservations, that helps even more protect more of our natural resources moving forward. And why it's so beneficial economically is because it does make us truly sovereign, but it also, it's a way of empowering our communities to give them a new way. Like, I know Henry's good at explaining this, and he'll say that is, he'll say it's a new way that honors the old way. And I really took that quote from Henry Red Cloud very, very seriously, that this is a new way that does honor the old way, that actually protects everything that what we're about. So a lot of times we say maybe it's about money. Yes, it does save money, but it also, it should be about a way of life on how we continue to live in a good way with Mother Earth and Mother Nature.
Chief Red Cloud, do you want to share with us more about that mentality, the new way that honors the old way?
Yes, I would like to. Solar, especially solar, it's in our DNA, so to speak. It's in our culture, our language, our ceremony, our song, and our dance. We're honoring the old way, and then with this new way, and then becoming sustainable, lessening our carbon moccasin print in a process, and putting a lot of people to work building these green teams for the exciting times yet to come, which is happening now. So yes, it's a great way to honor the old way with this new way.
Thank you. Cody, can you tell me more about the job creation and how that's changed people's lives?
Yeah, so what it does is, you know, we give a lot of our younger membership on reservations, they, you know, jobs come far and less and in between on reservation life. And a lot of our younger people are looking for something to do, looking for something to be a part of. And, you know, by us starting this Solar Warrior program within our organization, Indigenized Energy Initiative, what we've learned through that process is we give them a new beacon of light. And what I mean by that is it gives them something to be a part of, give them a new tools to be able to work in the outside world. Henry had it right when he said that, you know, when we did that, he did that solar training. We did an install here on Standing Rock, and a few of those individuals were recruited to install solar off the reservation by different other solar developers. And I think that's pretty cool in a way where, you know, if you think about 500 years ago when the Europeans first came to this land, it was Native Americans that taught them how to live here. It taught them how to grow foods, taught them how to build homes, be sustainable on these lands which we live on today here in Turtle Island. But it's like, I think we've come full circle again, where we're empowering our native people to learn this way of life. And that way of life, we're going out and teaching people how to live a good way again. And I think that's the most important part moving forward, and why also, you know, with Indigenized Energy Initiative, and why I want to talk a little bit about Sherry, is that they were, you know, us, me and Henry, we know our traditional ways of life. We know exactly, you know, how to live within the lands and what's needed. But we also needed somebody to come in and help us through learning about this technology and creating those partnerships that are non-Native partnerships. And I think, you know, with bringing the expertise of some of the former employees of Tesla and Solar City, which are some of the biggest renewable energy companies in the world, along on part of our team, that kind of solidified, you know, having Native expertise and bringing in the traditional sciences and cultural ways of life of our life, and collaborating that now to set a platform for the future. And that's why, you know, bringing Sherry and their team along with myself and Henry with a lot of this traditional expertise, we're able to set a platform for tribes to be able to learn this way of life and how to be able to utilize these technologies in our everyday life. But I'd like to elaborate and give Sherry a little bit of time to explain what Indigenized Energy can offer to Native tribes out there and why it's so beneficial for Native tribes to get involved in this way moving forward.
Thank you, Cody. You're doing an awesome job of introducing the guests today. I really appreciate it. I could let you direct this, and I love it. Sherry Smith is a CEO and founder of Indigenized Energy Initiative, and she's Mi'kmaq. Welcome to Native America Calling, Sherry. You have an amazing background. Please tell us about it.
Thank you. And thank you, Cody. Cody's great.
He is.
I appreciate the opportunity to be here and to talk about our initiative. As Cody said, I came from the solar industry for more decades than I care to admit. And it was in 2015 that I had the good fortune to be introduced to the Northern Cheyenne tribe, and specifically Otto Braided Hair, who is now our executive director. And he guides us, as does Cody and Chief Red Cloud and Bob Blake, in our traditional, making sure that we honor traditional ways and while we, you know, work in this modern world. So I founded the organization partly to honor my own Native heritage. I did not grow up on an Indian reservation. I grew up in a very, you know, colonial world. And there's always great work being done to look at the responsibilities humans have for creating and reversing climate change. But I realized, especially when I was first in Indian country, that this view has been through a colonial lens, looking at solutions that utilize the same structures that essentially have caused the climate crisis. What we are doing is looking through an indigenous lens. And our name, Indigenized, it means decolonizing the existing energy systems and energy policies to create and develop indigenous-informed systems and policies that are rooted in our relationships with each other and the land. And colonization brought with it capitalism, extractivism, and systems of white supremacy that really devalued indigenous knowledge and ways of being. It completely deconstructed them, except for small communities that stand strong, like Cody's, like Henry's. This initiative is empowering tribes to rebuild that foundation of self-determination and sovereignty using the power of the sun.
And what are some of the ways that your organization is empowering tribes to utilize the power of the sun, be more sovereign? What are some of the tools and resources that you're providing?
Sure. So, you know, a quick glance at social media, and we know that there's this tremendous climate justice uprising happening from, you know, DAPL and Keystone, and Native American people are catalyzing this movement, and they're sending a clear message to elected leaders, to industry, and to the world that they're no longer going to tolerate this fossil fuel regime and its destruction of sacred lands and indigenous ways of life. So while many tribes are saying no to these industries and seeking alternative, regenerative ways forward, they don't have the tools and resources to help themselves oftentimes. So indigenous communities that have been exploited by the fossil fuel industries for over a century and a half, without clean alternatives, Native people are forced to buy dirty energy from local utilities. They pay discriminatory rates that are sometimes more than double that of neighboring non-Native communities. This is a fact. And this has resulted in this rampant energy-caused poverty in Indian country. And compounding the problem is that the fossil fuel industries are currently one of the only sources of employment in these regions. So because of this, tribes have become dependent on the very companies that are destroying their homeland, mining for coal, drilling for oil, fracking gas. This situation is completely counter to Native culture and belief systems. So it is where we come in, it is to help with the numerous challenges to develop solar and other renewables at scale in tribal communities. It's not easy. If it was, it would have been done already. So traditionally, funding for solar and other renewables has been provided by the federal government. Typically, these grants don't provide enough money to cover the entire cost of a project, and they leave tribes to find millions of dollars in matching funds in order to see them through to fruition. Poor management also hampers these solar projects in a majority of cases, and that's no one's fault. That's because tribes don't have that infrastructure, most of them, to be able to manage the responsibility that comes with these federal grants. So because of this, Native American communities have been very slow to make the oil or coal to clean energy transition. Despite the U.S. DOE issuing millions and millions of dollars annually for funding, right? So since 2010, the Office of Renewable Energy, the Indian Energy that issues grants, they've only been 43 projects done. And that's because the management, there's not that capacity. So that tribal technical capacity being the significant barrier, specific expertise,
Sherry,
as Cody said.
We're going to hear more about this after the break, but we have to take a short break and we'll be right back. This is Native America Calling, and we're talking about sovereignty in terms of solar today. And thank you, and we'll be right back. Thanks for tuning in to Native America Calling. I'm Alyssa London. Tribes are taking on solar energy, some one house at a time, some for thousands of homes. Join our conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's 1-800-99-NATIVE. Now, on our call today, we have some great guests. We have Cody Two Bears, a co-founder of Indigenized Energy Initiative, Sherry Smith, CEO and founder of Indigenized Energy Initiative, and also Traditional Chief Henry Red Cloud, Executive Director of Red Cloud Renewable. Now, Sherry, before the break, you were sharing with us how, despite the Department of Energy's amount of funding and grants that they've made available to our Native communities, that there hasn't been that many projects completed, and you were sharing about what was preventing that from happening. Can you finish your thought?
Sure. I'm sorry, I get long-winded. I get passionate about this. There's so much opportunity that's here to be harnessed.
No, I appreciate the passion.
Okay. In short, the tribal technical capacity.
Now you don't have to be short. Now we have, you know, a good section of the show.
All right, great. So tribal technical capacity, as we were saying, is a significant barrier. And specific expertise is necessary to overcome some of the limitations, but it's not just technical, right? So beyond the technical expertise, a really deep understanding of tribal culture and governance, my Boston came out there, is necessary to be successful in developing projects within tribal communities. It requires more than just the energy expertise and development savvy, especially if we want to avoid falling into the same exploitive and discriminatory energy practices that have plagued Indian country for, you know, hundreds of years. So while tribes have this desire, few possess these capabilities, and that's where we come in. So the IEI team is, we're Native-led. We're directed by Native American leaders who have emerged as champions for change in solar energy in their communities, such as Cody, such as Henry, such as Otto and Bob. And we work alongside, shoulder to shoulder with them, and experienced educators and other industry professionals, finance experts that we have on our team. And we are so well equipped to nurture change in American Indian communities while also navigating these nuances and complexities of solar energy development. So I will be short about this because there's a lot behind it. But if I had to boil it down to three things that we do, we build the capacity of tribes to deploy and manage solar and other renewables themselves. This has to be Native-led. This has to be by Native people for Native people, or it's no different than the fossil regime. And second, we establish robust education, workforce, and economic ecosystems to support these efforts. Henry and his team are an integral part of that effort. And lastly, we use regenerative financial transactions and instruments to grow and evolve the impact. We leverage the federal funding that's out there, and we use it in a way that is, we use it in a way to bolster development and enable investment from actually outside investors to come in and match funds, for example, or even patient capital to come in and invest in these systems being built in tribal communities. The end goal for our tribal partners is tribal utilities being completely separate from the oppressive energy systems that they've been a part of in the past. So this is our goal, and this is IEI is there to push us towards that.
Yeah, it's a great goal, and it definitely helps enable sovereignty. Chief Red Cloud, can you expand on what Sherry referred to and how you're helping to build Indigenous workforces that can help with tribal solar energy projects?
Yes. Partnerships are very key in moving forward in Indian country. Really key. It's very important. There's at this current state, there is no time to reinvent the wheel. We have to partner up. We have to, with like-minded thinking organizations, partnerships, and bring in forward and move in forward quickly, because we're in a dire state throughout Indian country as well as globally due to climate change. So we want to do our part as natives to create this harmony and balance, bringing that back for not only native members, but overall everybody within. Partnerships, very key. We have to partner up. We have to start moving together to create, do a lot more in less time. So yeah, our stay.
Thank you, Chief Red Cloud. Cody, Sherry mentioned how your organization builds capacity within tribes to lead projects, solar projects themselves. Can you give us some stories about that?
Yeah, I think the most important part of why indigenized energy is so important moving forward is that we're empowering tribes and helping tribes with technical assistance, training, planning. There's a lot of Build Back Better funds that are out there through the Biden administration that, you know, allow renewable energy within our homelands. But the issue is a lot of tribes ain't prepped in how to apply for those grants because they don't know enough about renewable energy to be able to apply for them. Or, you know, tribes don't necessarily have a plan around renewable energy. And a lot of tribes want to engage in utilizing renewable energy. They just don't know where to start or where to begin. like I said, there's a lot of awareness that's been created out there on stopping fossil fuels, but there's not enough people out there that are actually combating that but actually doing something about it. And that's what Indigenized Energy is going to do, and we're going to do that free of charge to tribes. And I think that's the difference on what separates us, is because too long ago, like, you know, tribal program directors and tribal councils and tribal people that work within their tribes would know this very well, that outside resources would come in and build projects, turn around and leave Indian country, and us as Native people have not learned how to maintain or sustain a lot of these infrastructural projects and never learned about them. And what happens is those infrastructures crumble within Indian reservations because we continue to bring non-people into our reservation and do these projects, and they don't teach us how to maintain or sustain them. They just turn, get our money, and they leave, and they never hear from them again. Well, Indigenized Energy Initiative is the total opposite of that. We're going to stick hand in hand with tribes for tribes to be able to develop these types of projects, whether it's planning, whether it's training, whatever it may be. We want to work hand in hand with tribes to make sure they learn about this technology so they can be able to create infrastructure in a way where it's going to benefit future generations. And not only that, it's to help to get out there and apply for a lot of these funding sources that are available to tribes. And with our organization, we're able to do that today. We have that expertise to be able to do that because we have proven Native people that have done infrastructure projects that have been successful with Indian country. And we have also expertise that knows this training and this planning and is where to find grants today and how to pursue a lot of that funding outside reservation life within our team as well. So that's why I think our organization is its first of its kind initiative that is helping Native tribes develop renewable energy and look out for the best interest of Native people as a whole.
Thank you, Cody. This does sound like a much more sustainable approach for our communities. Now, we have a caller, Sage, from Albuquerque, New Mexico, listening in on KUNM. Sage, what is your comment that you have for our guest today?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say thank you for all the hard work that's being done. And I noticed the catchword sovereignty, and I noticed also the word used of decolonization, which seems to be utilized in a lot of our, you know, current discussions here in Indian country. But my question is, you know, it's all good and well that they're working so hard and they talk about sovereignty, but tribal governments are somewhat corrupt with factional politics within their tribal councils and presidents or tribal chairmen. So how does one talk about sovereignty and decolonization when the governments themselves are unhealthy? That's my question.
Okay. Thank you, Sage. That's a good question and perspective. Cody, given that you are a past tribal council member, can you take that question?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a very good question, is that, you know, particularly some tribal councils on different reservations are not ready for renewable energy, but maybe there's individuals or organizations within a tribe that are, you know. And prime example to answer his question is that my initiative, my nonprofit, owns and operates the largest solar farm in the state of North Dakota that helps our membership for Standing Rock. It's not tribally council owned, so tribal council don't have a say over how that solar farm is developed on Standing Rock. But necessarily it helps and benefits members of the tribe. So there's different circumstances on the tribe where, you know, there's organizations that are doing the work, and there's certain tribal organizations as tribal councils that are doing the work. So there's different examples within different tribes on what can be done today. So I encourage, you know, people out there to know that if the tribal councils ain't well informed in this, that we're also willing to help, you know, nonprofit organizations within tribes as well to be able to pursue renewable energy. And then at some point in time, you know, the tribal councils will get wind of what we're doing within their homelands, and they'll see the positivity and the success of what we're creating there, and they're going to want to be a part of that even more. So that just sparks maybe a flame underneath some of these tribal councils to get more involved and put some more of their tribal dollars into infrastructures that are going to be long-lasting and sustainable for their people.
So, Cody, you're saying that if tribal councils aren't on board, that you, your organization helps inform them, and that you're also encouraging tribal community members to build these solar projects outside of the approval of tribal councils if those are not already supportive of these types of projects.
Right, yes. So we do either or, because it's important to know that it is happening in any country, but at the same time, all we need to do is just show examples of how it's a success and how it can benefit Indian tribes. And it is kind of, light a flame under all their people. And I really believe that they'll be more accustomed to and more acceptive of allowing that to happen within their tribal organizations. All it really takes is just one project for them to understand how beneficial it can be for their people. And from there, we can help them develop a plan. We can create educational resources around that, and just help them pursue a lot of the tribal grant funding that's available out there.
Thank you, Cody. Sherry, can you tell us more about how people can engage with your organization and how you show them where to start and where to get going with these solar energy projects?
Sure. They can start by sending us an email at info@indigenized.energy and just reach out. And we'll start a conversation. Our Native co-founders, they spend a lot of time talking with tribes about energy planning and the future and what that looks like. With addressing what Sage asked, it's a good point. How can you be sovereign when you're reliant on outside sources for your resources? And we have to start somewhere. So true sovereignty can't come until we are no longer beholden to the fossil regime. And it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take a while. So reach out and chat with us. We are philanthropically funded. The business of the nonprofit, for us to offer this services to tribes at no cost, we run on philanthropy. So the MacArthur Foundation is our largest donor. Hazela Foundation is another large donor. And we run on donations, small and large, from people like your listeners. And at www.indigenized.energy, our website's under construction. You can read a little bit about us there. There's a donation link. But reach out. Reach out via email. Hit us up on social. We're on Insta, on Twitter, LinkedIn. And we'd love to get into a conversation and talk about what the future can hold.
Thank you, Sherry. And Chief Red Cloud, how can people engage with you and your organization and even the work you're doing with the National Center of American Indian Enterprise Development?
Yes. Native members can then look up our webpage at redcloudrenewable.org, www.redcloudrenewable.org. See how we can fit into your upcoming projects, the trainings that we offer here. Reach out to us, look at our webpage, send us a 21st century smoke signal, send us an email, and we can go from there and bring forward training more people. We have a full schedule this year. We have we implemented a professional training solar install course last year, last fall, and we're going to replicate that again this year. So, look for us out there in the Grandpa Google world, and we can then partner up and we can move forward aggressively. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Red Cloud. And as we finish out our show, Cody, any final words?
Yeah, I just like to thank you for allowing us to have this platform on your show today. And the most important thing, I think, moving forward is what can we do to make the next seven generations a more feasible one for our Native people? And what can we do to empower them to come out of their shell and wanting to do something, be something better? And I think utilizing renewable energy within our reservation communities, it does just that. This gives us another beacon of light, beacon of hope, and gets us out of our homes and to actually combat what's actually been putting us down all these years is these fossil fuels, these regimes, these one percenters, corporate America. That's who's been bringing us down all these years and put us to where we are today. And a way to combat that is renewable energy and to move into a new direction for the future and for our future generations to come. So thank you.
Thank you. Well, this has been an encouraging conversation. That's all the time we have for today's show. I want to thank our guests, Cody Two Bears, Sherry Smith, and Henry Red Cloud. I am back live again tomorrow with a show taking on 2022 with realistic goals and new resolve. We'll see you then. I'm Alyssa London, and this has been an episode of Native America Calling. Gunashish, thank you.
Program support is by Montana State University in Bozeman, home to MSU's Native American Studies Department and over 750 Native students from 35 states. MSU is proud to announce the October 16th grand opening of its new American Indian Hall, a project over 15 years in the making. American Indian Hall, a crossroads of culture and student support. Montana.edu/AIH.
Ah, chest spook neat, and chest be out in sheet. See chest Mariamistin's wheatish. Inchin kaint luan we, nechluas in quelly yetwa. Squiggle tausis to skelly such Mariam yet sachem. Squiment healthcare.gov, uqua squiggle tausin, 1-800-318-2596. Qual nacht smeet. Yet smem meet in Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.